HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 404, recorded live Thursday, December 26th, 2013. This episode of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at TELERIK.com. And by Franklins.net, makers of Gesture Pack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at GesturePAK.com. In this episode, Scott talks with iOS developer and professional model Lindsay Scott.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and right now I am talking with Lindsay Scott, iOS developer who happens to maybe on the side work as a model full time. Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fabulous. Thanks for chatting with me today. So you kind of showed up on the internet a couple of days ago with a Quora question. They basically, yeah. Someone asked, what does it feel like to go from physically unattractive to physically attractive? Can you describe what happened? What were you doing when you saw this question and what caused you to answer it?
It must have been 3 a.m. in the morning. I saw this question come up in my inbox, and for some reason in between programming code, I decided this would be a great idea to answer this question. Mm-hmm. And it's been an experience because it's something that was very personal to me, a very personal experience growing up and, you know, being bullied a bit and now being a successful model. Mm-hmm. It's kind of after the fact, after posting it and after seeing this incredible response I've gotten, which I wasn't expecting at all. It's been strange revealing so much about myself to so many people. Mm-hmm. But I think some good things have come from it.
Was this one of those stream of consciousness? Did it just kind of flow out from you? You threw some pictures in, posted it, and forgot about it?
Yes, I didn't forget about it for long, though. I woke up and all of a sudden I had so many views and comments and messages related to the article. Mm-hmm. So I didn't forget about it at all.
And then this is actually starting to make kind of regular news. This is showing up like
what?
It's starting to show up in regular news like San Francisco Gate and different news articles.
Oh.
That's good. This is legit. Does it feel a little bit... it's a little bit vulnerable, isn't it, when you put yourself on the internet like that?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And it's hard to describe exactly what I was going through during that time. And it's something I don't think about as regularly as I used to, you know, those experiences during that time. So it's weird to open up that part of my life again and in such a public way.
Mm-hmm. Does it feel, though, sometimes that, like, do you feel like two different people, or and when you're a stranger on the internet? In this instance, I'm a stranger on the internet, right?
Yes.
You're a very pleasant and an articulate young woman, and I can see that that's you at age 11, but it seems like a different person. Do you feel like a different person, or do you feel like this is an evolution?
I feel like the same person on the inside, mm-hmm. but it's also strange because. Those same people that I went to middle school and then high school with, it was a 7-year school. Mm. So they saw me grow from middle school to high school. And seeing them after the fact, years later, and having them automatically look at me and decide that I'm a completely different person, it's off-putting. It's weird.
Yeah, it is.
And it's uncomfortable. When also, I didn't really know why back then they viewed me in such... disregard. It's such disregard.
So it actually was disregard. You felt disrespected and disregarded.
Yeah, I wasn't treated very well. I was bullied.
You were actually bullied. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I've moved on past it. So yeah, it's weird talking about it now because I really have moved on, but I was bullied.
Yeah, it is. I went to my 20-year high school reunion and, to be honest, had forgotten how much I was bullied. Mm-hmm. And I'm not one to think about things in terms of like revenge or anything like that. But there's that old, saying that the best revenge is living well.
Yeah.
And I ended up bumping into someone at the end of the night at the high school reunion who was really intoxicated, and just, it was clear that their life was not going well. And this was the person that used to beat me mercilessly, you know what I mean? Like shoved into a locker type person. And they're, I mean, it doesn't really matter what they're doing now, but let's just say that they're not doing anything amazing or awesome. And I thought, having just giving it the slightest bit of thought before I went to the event, that, oh man, wouldn't it be awesome to see those, you know, those people and those bees and those a-holes and, you know, see that their lives suck. But when you're faced with that, it was just really sad. It was like, I would not have wished this level of pain and lack of success. Basically, an individual who peaked at 20, at 17, well, I feel like I haven't peaked at all. You know what I mean? I wonder, do you hold negativity towards those people?
No, I think over time I've also realized that the people who, you know, might have pushed me or thrown my books down or whatever they did, that they clearly had their own insecurities. So I'm over it.
Yeah,
I understand that we all had our issues back then.
Yeah. When you're growing up and you're thinking about software, is it something where you had a mindset towards computers, or did you discover, like in high school working on a calculator somehow, that you were a programmer? Yeah. You didn't even realize it.
Yeah, I started doing games on my TI-89, and I'd read through the documentation and find out all about the different capabilities. But I didn't at all equate that to computer science until college, when I took a computer science course and realized, wait a second, this is very familiar. I've done this before.
Did you have computers in your life?
Yeah. there were computers. They were much slower back then.
Was there a moment you can say, like, was it the TI-89? For me, it was the Commodore 64. Like, when my dad, one day I came home, the van was gone, and there was a Commodore 64, and I found out that my dad had sold the van because the teachers had said, you need to get this kid a computer to keep him out of trouble. So he just did whatever he could do. So he sells the van, and this Commodore shows up, and I didn't know anything about it. And that was the moment. And if that van hadn't been sold, I never would have seen a computer. Like, my neighborhood didn't have computers. It was the only one within blocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it was the TI-89. I wish I had a similarly cool story.
That's still a pretty cool story.
It was interesting, though. Once I've gotten older, I've realized my own father has experience in computer science. He worked for the NSA, programming for them. Yeah, and I didn't know that at all. Until after my computer science, after I got my computer science degree, that, wait a second, we have this thing in common. And I didn't even realize.
Do you talk tech with him now? Is that something you bond with?
When he worked there, it was mostly zeros and ones. So he likes to brag that he's the best programmer out there, but I don't think he's done any of it in many, many years.
Yeah, punch card days.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's scary, though. As soon as you said NSA, I mean, I don't know if you watched Scandal or not, but I was just like,
yeah.
Wow, that's your dad? Hopefully he didn't kill anyone during his time at the NSA, just programming.
I'm sure he didn't.
Now, I noticed that you have a burgeoning career on Stack Overflow as well.
Yeah, over the past couple of weeks, I've gotten really involved with it. I've been building up my reputation.
Is that related to the Quora post? Like, did the Quora post mark a point where you decided it's time for you to become a social programmer, or is this a coincidence?
No, it's a coincidence completely. I started, maybe the fact that I started becoming more social online, having a new Twitter page, a new Instagram, adding my answers to Stack Overflow, maybe that made posting my answer on Quora a little easier. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was a more natural progression because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I started answering the questions on Stack Overflow a few weeks before my Quora post.
Do you think this is the beginning of a new era that involves social programming? And you know what I mean by that? Like, you've been a solitary developer, yes. Sounds like, for a number of years, haven't you?
Yes. In college, I did programming. For example, we had one class with just three students in it where we just spent the entire semester building a compiler. And so I've had those experiences programming in groups. But yeah, over the past few years, I've definitely been very much a solitary programmer.
Mm-hmm. And you went to Amherst in Massachusetts?
Yeah. Yes.
And you did graduate with an undergrad in computer science?
Yes, computer science and theater.
That is actually deeply awesome. Is that a double major or was one of the...
I majored separately.
Separately? Double major. Wow, yeah, double major. That's awesome. That's funny. My background is in theater as well. I did theater and I did musical theater. So, you know, what's funny is that set me up for a career kind of as a programmer slash presenter and teacher.
Yes.
So that's interesting. Have you thought about user groups and presenting? So like,
definitely,
you should do that. I mean, that's the closest thing programmers have to theater.
Yeah, I spoke to Hadi, the head of Code.org yesterday, and I would definitely love to get involved with an organization like that and give lectures and speeches,
mm-hmm.
and try to encourage young kids, especially women and minorities, to program. To learn more about technology.
Mm-hmm. Now, Code.org, for people who may not be familiar, is a nonprofit, and they have a sister organization called Computing in the Core, and it's a public nonprofit. It's a 501c3, and they're focused on STEM with a focus on code. You may have heard this idea of teach an hour of code that anyone can learn.
Yes, they also have Hour of Code. They just released 2 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and I was astonished. 15 million students, I think within the first week, were on the website creating their own code, creating their own programs.
Yeah, 170 countries, everyone is starting to learn to code. Yeah.
And he told me that's more than signed up to Instagram, for example, and Facebook and all of this within several years. So in 1 week, more students are involved or are interested, are doing programming than, you know, all these other social media websites.
I think that the thing that I like most about code and why I think things like code.org and organizations like them are so interesting is I think that they teach people to be creators as well as consumers. I think that we have a lot of people that are just spending their time consuming.
Yeah.
Now you said that as we talked a little bit before we started recording that you wanted to find different ways to express yourself creatively. So your job, like your work and what pays the rent today, is modeling.
Yes.
But that is a sense of expression, of theater, of creation.
I think I got involved with it because of my interest in acting. After college, I started doing acting. I thought I would do that, and somehow I ended up getting a contract with Calvin Klein, and that really set off my career with modeling. During that year, I worked for, you know, Prada, Gucci. All of a sudden, these jobs were coming in, and Victoria's Secret. I also did Victoria's Secret show that year.
Mm-hmm.
And just the fact that I'm able to put on all these outfits and makeup and have my hair done and become these different characters, it's exciting. That's my favorite part, definitely, about the job.
And when you're traveling around, I assume you're spending months in different cities and, you know, it's like a contract job. You go somewhere and you work for an organization for some number of months, or how does that work?
No, I travel a lot, but each job is, most jobs don't come with a contract.
Okay.
So I do one job here and then I go to a bunch of castings and maybe through those meetings, through those auditions with people, I find out I get another job. And so it's all very last minute. Nothing's guaranteed when I go traveling.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily it's worked out okay for me.
So does that mean that you'll say, I'm going to go to London for this job and then I'll stick around for a few months and hope other jobs are found?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then do you write your code when you're kind of just hanging out in the hotel? Or how does that, explain to me how you balance what is effectively a full-time, albeit piece together job with your writing apps and putting apps in the app store?
Sure. I when I start coding, I have trouble stopping for the most part. But I'll maybe I'll start before casting, go to meet with clients, and then come back and pick up where I left off. And the same for jobs. I'll start coding in the morning, do my job, come home, probably stay up way, way, way too late, and do the same thing the next day. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I bring my computer science issues into work, I'm sure, where I'm on the phone with Apple during my hair and makeup.
Seriously? Have you ever? Yeah. That is really important. Have you been in the chair getting your hair and makeup done with the laptop in your lap and you're writing code?
It's happened before. I'm not proud of that moment.
I have to say that I am proud of that moment, and I was not anywhere near that moment. That is awesome.
I'll try not to do that so often. but there was just an issue with the Apple server, and I needed to push an update.
I'm just saying, though, that like the thing that I find so interesting about it is that my initial reaction when I heard about this and what you were doing was that these are two incompatible things. But now as we talk, the more and more I hear about it, this is all just a form of creation and expression, and they are very compatible things.
That's true. And with my last app that I released, it was specifically for models and artists. Mm-hmm. I made this portfolio app. As a model, we carry around our books with our pictures in them, and they're heavy, and the books fall apart, and the pages get dirty, and sometimes you forget to have your comp card in back, which is like a business card for models. Okay. So I created an app called iPort. It's available on the Apple App Store for mm-hmm. iPads.
Okay.
And so it's something that's out there, and it's something that models are using. So it's nice to create a product, one that's useful for yourself, mm-hmm. but then also useful for the people in the industry that you surround yourself with.
So it looks like your app has just been updated just a couple weeks ago. It looks like you put out mm-hmm. version 1.5.
Yeah.
That's great. And does someone take this app and like, oh, I'm a model, and let me pull out my iPad, and I'll show you my portfolio?
Yes. Oh, I mean, I carry my portfolio around.
Okay, so now she's on Skype here, so she's pulling out her portfolio immediately. Yeah. This is awesome. So can you then share it with someone? Could I?
Yes.
Like, let's say you meet someone on a train, and this is a scout.
Yes.
You can share your portfolio to them?
As long as you have internet access, if you have 3G network or Wi-Fi, then yes, you can enter their email address, and it'll send it right to them. And they can even open it up in the app. So if they have the app on their device, or if they download the app for free on the Apple App Store, then they can view your portfolio in its original format with the custom table background, the custom book color, the custom logo, and everything that you've designed for yourself.
Where did you get all the assets? It seems like it's a very polished app. You've got textures and backgrounds and all sorts of stuff. Did you find a texture pack, or how did you pull it off?
Like stock images. Mm-hmm. And I added them to fit the portfolio books, and most of the books are various colors, so I created a lot of those graphics too.
That's cool. And is that something that you find yourself always selling, that in the sense of like you see like a model or a friend with an iPad, you're like, hey, did you know that you can run your portfolio?
Sometimes, but rarely. For the most part, they see me with the app, and we're like, wait, oh, that looks cool. Where did you get that from? So I'll tell them then.
Do you think that that's one of the unifying traits of nerds, though, the idea that there's a problem and I have the power to build something to fix it?
Well, that's definitely the thing that I love about programming. So maybe.
I've always felt that as a builder, like a programmer is a builder, and how can you not see a problem of some kind and not want to write something or make something or create something that is utilitarian, some utility mm-hmm. to, like you clearly saw a problem and then you want to solve this problem. And I think that I call that one of the unifying traits of nerds. And I've decided to own that word, you know, like they can't hurt me with the word anymore. The idea of a nerd.
They can't push you into the lockers with the word anymore.
No, they can't. Did you think about yourself as a nerd? Does that word have meaning to you?
No, I didn't really think of myself as a nerd growing up. It's just everyone else called me a nerd growing up. But now that I'm older and wiser, yeah, it doesn't hurt me so much anymore either.
Yeah. There's definitely been, I think, a move as the internet, like as someone who was on the internet before the internet was cool, you know, and I don't know about you, but I mean, I was on, you know, AOL and all this kind of like, you know, I was online before people were online. And that it's almost like when you have a band that no one's ever heard of, but you've heard of, and then everyone gets on that band and you're like, oh, you know, but I knew about them before. I feel like that about the internet. Like everyone's talking about how exciting social media is, but I was on CompuServe, man, and we were social before social, you know? And now people are taking the word and they're modifying it. Like there's, I don't know if you've heard the term blurred, blurred. Black nerd.
Oh, yes, I have.
Yeah. There's websites like Planet Blurred and.
Yeah. What's the guy from Community called himself a blurred.
Yeah. What's his name? Yeah. Yeah. The guy from Community, who is a childish Gambino.
Danny Glover.
Yeah, Donald Glover. Danny Glover.
That's it. That's
yes, Donald Glover, who also has an album out, Childish Gambino. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a way of saying that that's cool. And then you have, I think, people like CeeLo who choose to dress a certain way. And it's like, wait a second, I can be popular and interesting and well-spoken and a geek and into software and into gadgets and widgets and all of those things. And that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. I hope it's okay.
I think it's deeply okay. I think it's deeply okay. So do you feel like you are living on both sides of reality? Sometimes I feel like I'm categorized as a computer person. Like I'll go to a party, I'll meet someone and we'll be chatting and then they'll go, oh, you're a computer person. And that either means we're going to be like friends for life because they're a computer person too, or this conversation is over because I'm not a computer person.
That's strange. I couldn't imagine that happening. Where you talk about your profession and, well, with me as a model, that happens sometimes where people feel uncomfortable after I mention the fact that I'm a model.
So you're seeing that as, so that profession, that aspect of your personality is the, I don't want to say turn off, but I want to say imposing. Like you meet someone.
It's definitely not necessarily a turn off. Sometimes it's a turn on, but, it always takes precedence over everything about me with strangers. Often as soon as they find that out, their opinion's made up. And
you said it much better than I did. That's exactly right. The identity, that label model for you is the thing that someone will notice when they meet you or they chat with you or you talk to them and then you say, oh, I'm a model. I'm paid to be attractive and to do these things. Well, as a software person, when I meet someone and they go, oh, you work for Microsoft or, oh, you're a software guy. There's like, they immediately, you can see where they almost kind of put you in a box. Their faces change, their posture changed. And now they're like, oh, I got you figured out.
I see.
You're a model or you're a computer guy. Yeah. Yes. I don't really know anything about computers or I don't really know anything about modeling. You could be put into two different boxes. Like if you just led, you should try this sometime. Lead with the software engineer thing.
Yeah.
And as you meet people who aren't technical, see how their posture and their style changes around you. It's interesting. I feel in talking to non-technical people, like in my neighborhood here, that if I lead with being a computer person, that they suddenly like have very little to talk about. Which seems like it's very similar with you with the modeling. Like if you say, I'm a model, like, you know, gosh, well, I don't have a passport.
People, when you tell someone, I don't think a lot of people, most people probably don't know fashion models or don't run into them in their day-to-day lives.
Mm-hmm.
So they normally have questions for me. They're often intrigued, but sometimes you don't always want to talk about your living, your livelihood in a way that sensationalizes it, especially.
Is that what they usually want to do? I mean, I know that when people talk to me about software, they think that we make piles of money and we know everything about every kind of computer.
Yeah. Well, they want to know what kind of clothes I get for free and where I've traveled and who I know and all this. And I'm a human being. I'm a pretty normal person. But it's not something I necessarily feel the need to talk about, with strangers.
Yeah, I hear you. Let's talk about the app as we end here.
Sure.
So you've got a couple. You have the one app now, and you're working on a second app. What kinds of features of you're doing iOS apps, right? So are these universal apps, iPhone and iPad?
I have actually two apps currently on the App Store. Okay. The first one is a universal app. It's for a charity. I created this app for a charity called Educate, which it sponsors Ugandan youths, and that's for both iPad and iPhone devices. Mm-hmm. The last app I made for model portfolios is specifically for iPad, since that's the best way to view the portfolios mm-hmm. on an iPad device. The current app I'm working on uses both iPad and iPhone devices.
Now, your iPort app right now is free to download, but then it says something, it says holiday special, $2 to upgrade. You have like in-app purchases?
Yes, it's to get the full version of the app where you can have multiple portfolios, have more backgrounds and table templates to choose from. Right now, that's $199 to upgrade.
Have you found that model works better? Like, I know that there's lots of different thoughts around how to get people to download. There's trials, and there's 99 cents to download and more to upgrade. Do you find that free to download and then an in-app purchase to unlock is the best way?
I'm not sure if it works better necessarily. It seems like it would, but my reasoning behind that is that I want people to use what I've created. I enjoy that idea of someone having my app on their phone. And yeah, it's important to monetize it. I have a little advertising in that app, and I have the in-app purchases. Mm-hmm. But I do want people to download it and to have it for free. I feel like that's the best way to get them at least to check it out and see what it's about.
Is monetization and the idea of a second career why you're coding, or do you think that you'll always do both things? Or like, I'm trying to understand, do you want to make money on this, or is it really more of a creative outlet where you have to express yourself and it doesn't really matter whether you make money on your app?
Well, in order to create apps, I can't necessarily do every single modeling job that comes along. For example, I've had to turn down some smaller jobs with smaller paychecks, just to make sure that just to focus on this a bit more, just to get it done. And so, yeah, it's good for me to monetize it to some extent, just to compensate for the work I'm losing modeling-wise.
Really? So you've prioritized coding over your full-time job and said, you know,
only
I'm not going to take
jobs, only for jobs that I don't necessarily feel like I need mm-hmm. or want to do.
And about how much time do you spend coding in an average week while you're working?
A lot. I'd say 20 at least. Or no, more than that. Some days, when I was working on iPort, I must have been spending at least 12 hours a day. I mm-hmm. did that app in about a month and a half. I'm a pretty quick coder. That app probably took a month and a half. And I was working at least 12 hours a day on it when I wasn't doing a modeling job from 9 to 5.
Wow. So it sounds like you have kind of the typical coder obsessive personality, in the sense of like when the app is inside you, you have to get the app out.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And I won't sleep until it's done.
Yeah. Has that been a coding quality problem at all? Have you had any major issues?
No. I haven't because, well, in this case, this app took, like I said, a month and a half. And then I did those additional, I guess, 5 updates. Mm-hmm. And right now I'm very happy with the way it is right now. Mm-hmm. But no, I'm pretty thorough. I really check for errors and issues as I go along. So it hasn't been an issue.
Do you have any tales of particular bugs that have kept you up or have had any like major issues? Like sometimes you have war stories about like a particular bug you couldn't catch or a feature that you couldn't crack, and then mm-hmm. that moment of epiphany when you've solved that problem.
It happens all the time. I think when switching from iOS 6 to iOS 7, there were a lot of things that I needed to research in order to make that transition and to find out what the new device, what the new iOS system was capable of, such as background modes. The fact that now it supports 7 background modes instead of the 2 original ones, I think location changes and playing music in the background was those were the only things previously supported. But now that they've implemented background fetch, background mode, location service background mode, local push notification background mode, all these things are very useful, and it makes for a better user experience and a more. It gives you more options as far as programming an app goes.
Have you thought about lighting up specific features, or did you light up specific things to make your app utilize iOS 7?
Light up?
Like when you light up a feature, it's like, oh, if you have iOS 6, the app works like this. But if you have iOS 7, I detect that you support this background mode or that background mode. So I'm going to light up this feature. Are there any things that you're looking forward to within iOS 7 that you're going to think will make iPort go to that next level?
Okay. With iPort, I didn't necessarily need any of, say, these new background modes. I didn't need any of that.
Mm-hmm.
The way it is now, it works perfectly for its intended purpose. With this new app that I'm working on, it's a networking app of sorts in which I'm using several iOS 7 things particular to iOS 7, mm-hmm. especially the background modes, the background fetch. I'm performing background fetch every 10 minutes to get information from my parse server.
Mm-hmm.
I'm checking for location updates, as you know, I could have done with iOS 6 mm-hmm. too. And I'm also using push notifications to trigger server and interface updates while the app is in the background.
So it sounds like you just said you're using parse for your back end.
Yes, yes. At first I was using Amazon S3. I've used that with previous apps.
Mm-hmm.
And parse is it has so many great features. Like you could have various users. It does a lot of the legwork for you.
Mm-hmm.
So right now I'm very happy using parse. As long as I'm dealing with files that aren't too large, because there is I believe a minimum file size for, it only takes, for Amazon S3, I can have files as big as I want, and it's just, I'm just, charged per server call.
Right.
But with parse, it's a little different. It doesn't take so much data on the...
Oh, so there's a maximum file size. So there's...
Yes, yeah. Or there's a maximum amount of space.
Oh, okay.
Entire class.
So your new app comes out in a couple of weeks, and hopefully I'll when you let me know what it is, I'll add the a link to the show notes for this show. And I'll also, if you don't mind, I'll put your Stack Overflow profile and a link to the Quora question so folks can read about... what it was like to go from in the statement of the Quora question from physically unattractive to physically attractive. But I like what you say, where you know you really haven't changed. You're still the same interesting person as before, and no one could see it before.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for chatting with us today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.